Accession number 27340, Reel 4.
Brent Biggs, Reel 4.
I was lying on my side, on my right-hand side, and I was, because I got a local anaesthetic, it was quite numb, and I was able to see the operation being carried out on the lights above the operating table, which I found quite interesting, and it didn't worry me in the slightest. And I stayed in there for about we're almost ready to sail, and this was in April, the 12th of April, and I was only in there for a comparatively short time, but pressure was brought to bear from the ship to get me back as soon as they possibly could.
Could you run through a little bit, prior to the accident, what you were doing while the ship was standing by? What were you involved in? What was your specific role on board at that stage?
Well, basically, I was learning the job, really, and there's one aspect I don't think I've touched on, and that is the fact that victualling also refers to clothing. So we were responsible for the issue of clothing. So we kept a running record of that sort of thing, relating to stores that were coming on board. They all had to be taken on and booked in, and we knew on the books how many sort of this we had in, how many sort of that we had in, everything relating to food, rum, and of course clothing.
What types of food were you bringing on board?
Well, everything. At that time, or when we stored ship.
Well, I was thinking really at the stage while you were still standing by, really. Was there anything coming on board then?
Yes, just to keep us ticking over. And that was supplied because we'd... I can't remember the number of people we had on board at that time, but it, down to its lowest, just to keep the place ticking over. And... I relieved a leading stores assistant, or supply assistant, who was known there. And strangely enough, it was called Clark, and he came from Bradford. And obviously his nickname was Nobby. And he stayed about 2 or 3 weeks, and we did the rum ration together, and we did stores together of clothing and food. And of course, we got on board as much fresh food as we possibly could. But that wasn't easy, because rationing ashore, it wasn't available. And I'm pretty certain anything we required, we sent a wagon to Northallerton, where there was a stores base, and we drew on the rations from there. But we still used tin milk, rather than fresh milk.
And again, while the ship was standing by, who's on board? Obviously yourselves are on board, but what type of crew on board? Because you won't have your full complement at all, would you, that day?
No, from our point of view, Commander Knott was Commander S, delightful man, Maurice H. Knott. And he was on board. And we had a supply divisional officer came, and his name was Henry D. Solomon. In Civvy Street, he was an accountant somewhere in London, and I had the privilege of meeting him off his train and taking him back to the Belfast. The only thing that seemed to concern him was if I could go first class or not. I said, oh, it won't matter on this route. But he again was a very delightful man. And although he was basically an accountant and therefore didn't sort of interfere with the running of the supply, other than the fact he was a divisional officer. And then we had a sub-lieutenant called Marsh. And he came as far,
some lieutenant, he was RNVR supply, and he was J Marsh, I think he was. It doesn't matter, does it? Anyways, J Marsh, again, nice man, came to see me in hospital, as did everybody practically. But I think they sort of realised that if they set sail without one member of a small number of supply assistants, they'd have a lot of work, because the Belfast, having been on Russian convoys and the conditions on Russian convoys, the highest rating they had in the supply division was a chief with the petty officer Charlie Best, and it was just quite impossible for them to keep pace with the demand. So therefore there was so much work to be done by the chief when he came on board, that he sort of working sort of 12 hours a day was standard procedure for us, trying to get it up to date before we set sail. Anyway, he got mentioned in dispatches for his work, the chief, and he richly deserved it.
Where would the supplies come from?
Well, when we stored ship, I think we drew on the stores at North Allerton, which was a general store for everywhere, and just because of its close proximity to Newcastle, a lot of ships came into Newcastle for refuelling, that this and that and the other, and they were quite, you know, they were able to get it. And if not, I think it came up possibly from the South Coast. A train load of it came up, you know, the sort of... the majority of the storing ship was done whilst I was in hospital. But that was that. But I just did the records when I got back.
You did mention, though, obviously, one of the peculiarities being that the room was stored with toilet rolls in the spirit store. Where were other things stored on board the ship?
We had innumerable stores, right from up forward to down aft. The spirit room was right in the stern of the ship. In fact, we used to get it up on the quarter deck, and it was beneath the officers' quarters, right aft. But then there were other stores which most of the stores were in cases clearly marked as to what they were, and of course you've got to, while you're in action stations or likely action stations, you've got to distribute the stores so that one product is not located in one storeroom, because otherwise, if that gets hit and it gets underwater, you've got to go on to the others. And so therefore, you've got to sort of distribute it. And of course, this is what the chief petty officer is for, because he's been in the job for, I don't know, Ray was in... it was 27... He'd been in 10 years. He'd been out east before the war in Penang, a shore base in Penang.
So he was very experienced in the whole kind of provisioning of a ship and how those provisions would be distributed. Mm-hmm.
And then eventually we got a warrant officer who was really above the chief. But
So how did the relationships work between everybody? Because you said earlier on you were all friends together.
Yeah.
But how did it work with, say, your rank and their rank? Because some of them are quite high up, aren't they, in the kind of...
Well, if you work in close proximity, I mean, he called me Briggsy, I called him Chief. The warrant officer was a bit... I didn't like him, to be honest, the warrant officer. I think because of my... sort of view of the chief, it seemed to me that somebody had come, he'd done all the work, and then this warrant officer came in, took the desk the chief used to sit at, and he had to sit next to me. And you know, when he was about, the friendliness between us sort of dropped to a different level. and he was called Dan Deavy, actually, and he came from Dublin. Well, there was a lot of there was a lieutenant on board called Cobb, Lieutenant Cobb, and he was an Irishman. He's a lad, he really was. but you know, there's sort of, but when I was on the Belfast, I can't recall anybody having an argument. I mean, when I say an argument, I mean it's sort of a nasty argument. I mean, the difference of opinion, no doubt, but it was, you know, our little lot, the supply division, always got on very well together.
Well, that raises a question. Would you say Belfast was a happy ship?
Oh, yes. Oh, I'm sure it was, yeah.
What do you think makes a happy ship?
I don't really know. I think it's the attitude, mainly of the officers concerned. But being in the supply branch, you don't come across, you don't come into contact with people, except if they want a new suitcase, if they come and say, oh, so you see, so you have that bit of power. I remember a sub-lieutenant sort of saying, I haven't brushed my suit sufficiently to go ashore. And then he, about a week after he came, he wanted a suitcase. And I looked at him and sort of said, well, you better see the chief, hadn't you? He'll be back in half an hour. And it, of course, he had to, yeah. Whether he realised why I'd done it, I don't know. But you see, we had there was a commander supply, a lieutenant supply, sub-lieutenant supply, and a midshipman. That was the sort of officers. And of course, I'm jumping ahead here, but my 21st birthday, the chief baker made me a cake, and he could only find three candles. He said, not four candles, three candles. And he brought it to me mid-morning, you see. He says, I brought it with you so you can give chief it with his rum ration. And it was a lovely cake, just the one. And Richard Jackson, he was a midshipman, he came down as well, you see, and the commanding officer rang me up in the office. It was very pleasant. I mean, that sort of attitude seemed to go, certainly in our division.
Would you say the supply branch might be slightly semi-unique in that sense?
Yes, I think so. Well, I'm sure so, really, because ultimately we went into a fleet shore establishment, that's just before I came home. And of course, we're at Fleet Shore Establishment, which is about, I don't know, half a mile from where the dock was, the dry dock. And we went ashore, and they wanted to wanted us to sort of form up and march down. And I said to Bert, he was a leading hand, so I said, we can't, I was senior to, and there was three of us, the Bert Knowles, Bill Lloyd and myself, sort of the older hand. I said, we're not going to march back, are we? I said, shall we have a word with somebody? He said, yes, I'll go down and say solid. This was Lieutenant Solomon. I said, is it necessary for us to form into a party and march down? He said, do you have to do that? I said, we have at the moment. He said, oh, I'll have a word, I'll have a word. And he had a word, and you know, that was it.
So would you say that the supply branch, again, differed from the ordinary routine of the ship?
Oh, yes, yeah. Mm. We didn't have... I mean, there are pros and cons to this. If you're a rating on the ship, you work in watches, you see. Well, OK, we're not in watches, but we don't knock off. We start at about 8 o'clock in the morning or earlier, and we work sometimes half past 10 at night, and we're working all day except for going for, you know, I once went to the pictures without telling, we had a cinema on board, and if you've never been into a, if you've never seen Jean Crane in State Fair, we had that on, and I mean, the remarks, unsolicited remarks, the super, a marvellous experience, funnier than the film. I went to the cinema. I forgot to tell Chief when I got back. He says, "Where the have you been?" I said, "I've been to the pictures." "Bloody pictures? All that walk to do?" He said, "How long are you staying?" I said, "Oh, I'll stay till 11. "That's a good lad." And that was it, you see. It was taking the mickey, but it was making the point that he expected me to be there. But I got on my report, it says here from the commander, where is it? I'll read it out, though, anybody that hasn't seen it. I'll read it out to you, and it says, report from Commander Supply, Belfast Stores Assistant. The name was Briggs, from 19th of April 44, that was when I joined the Navy. Victualling storerooms accounts, quiet, steady and reliable, has worked long hours cheerfully and well, a pleasing and likeable type. And that was me.
So if I can take you a little bit there, you've been working on board the ship while the ship was standing by, and then she was really ready for sailing when you had your accident. Mm-hmm. What happened when you came out of hospital? You rejoined...
I rejoined the Belfast. At this point she'd moved from the dry dock across the Tyne to North Shields, and that's where I rejoined her.
Were the majority of the ship's company joining her at that stage?
Yes.
Where were you at that stage then? Where was your accommodation on board? Where were you messing?
I was messing in a hammock in the supply mess, which is the same as any mess on the ship, apart from chief mess, petty officer mess, and of course the wardroom, so on and so on. The general mess, and we were sort of in a mess which was separated into four quarters. And at the time, I think the mess next door was torpedo men, and another one was the signalling men, and another one was a radar. And we were just in this quarter. If we'd all been there at the same time, it would be difficult to have sat down when it was full, when the complement was all there.
Given that you didn't work watches, what times of the day would you eat then in the supply?
Oh, at normal times, we'd all, you know, you had breakfast, I think it was sort of 7:30 to 8. And then up spirits was 11:30, and dinner at 12 o'clock. But one other difference that the supply branch had was that we had a mess man. Because of the fact that we didn't work watches, it was not a fixed time for one reason or another. So we had a mess man, and he got the folk from the galley, he served it up, and he washed up afterwards. And there was no question of any sort of difference in rank. It was merely his job, and it was a nice job to be in, and it was... His job was allocated by the chief buffer, who allocated all jobs to the ship's company.
And you said you were sleeping in a hammock. How did that operate in the mess? How would the hammocks be?
There were bars in the mess which had a loop in the structure where you put your slingy hammock at one end and sling it at the other, and there was always sufficient room for hammocks to be slung quite close together. But eventually I got a camp bed which had issued by the naval stores, and they're not issued to the crew, but if you've got a friend in the naval stores, you've got a camp bed which had to be put up and taken to bits every night. But I used to sleep outside the office. I've slept up on the upper deck. I've slept down in the wardroom quarters when we were on, when we had to, obviously in active action stations, you had to be somewhere near where you had to be told, and you had to sort of sleep in a, and it was down in the near the spirit issue room, but one deck above.
What, you were sleeping in a hammock? Is there a technique for getting into a hammock?
Yes, yes. You you put your hands on the rail which holds the hammock. You've slung it in the meantime. You've stood on wherever you can stand, and you've tied it up with knots which you try to remember for when you were trained to do a knot at either end. As long as you make it fairly safe, it won't slip. You learn that bit. And then you get into a hammock by putting your hands up on the bars and lifting yourself up, and then swinging your legs up to settle on the open hammock, and you have stays at either end so that you can keep it wide. And then you just get in, and you've a blanket, or no blanket as the case may be. It's blanket or nothing. And you don't do pyjamas, of course. Depends where you are, what you're sleeping, doesn't matter. And you pull yourself up, and you get into it and go to sleep. And then I remember the first night, I went to bed quite early because I was tired, and of course these guys came back from being ashore, and suddenly I found this face opposing me with a beardy breath. And he looked at me, he said, "Who are you then?" So I told him. He said, "Oh, I'm a cook. I live at Stoke-on-Trent. How are you?" And that was it. He said, "I'll see you in the morning." And that was it, you know. So they're all quite friendly.
Were they comfortable to sleep in?
Yes, they were comfortable. The worst part of it was putting it up, lashing it up the next morning, and putting it away. And I found a camp bed a lot easier to cope with.
Where were you supposed to stow away your hammocks?
In each mess deck, there was a corner of the mess deck, and the whole of that mess deck, which consisted of, I would think, about 40 people, had to stick the hammock in that hammock storage in the corner of the mess deck.
And what about storage of personal possessions?
You had a locker. That locker didn't bear any resemblance to where you slept, where you ate, where you did anything. It was just a locker that was in a what we used to describe as a gash space, which meant that there was not used for any other purpose other than there were lockers. And there were some on the mess deck, but insufficient to cope with the number of personnel. At one time I had one which was what they described as a canteen flat. And what the canteen flat was, it was where the NAFI had a room where they sold things, and you could, it was essentially a recreation room where you could go sit down and chat and probably play cards or play drafts or chess if you were so disposed. And they sort of served a drink, and I forgot what it was called. It was peculiar to the NAFI and peculiar to the Navy. And the devil was it called? If I remember it, I'll come back to it, but I can't remember at the moment. And it was a concoction, a bit like sarsaparilla. It was non-intoxicant, of course, but it came from the NAFI. And you used to buy things at the NAFI, like soap, hair cream, shampoos, all things, toothpaste, toothbrushes, no, not toothbrushes, sorry, toothpaste, bits and bobs that you can't get on board. Although you can have an issue of soap from the stores, but most people got toilet soap from the nothing.
What about washing facilities? What did you have?
Or showers. And the showers, the separate showers were for chiefs and petty officers, not counting the officers' quarters. Chiefs and petty officers, they had their own showers. And then the rest of them were sort of located at various parts of the ship. And whilst we were in dock, some would be in action, others weren't. Sometimes everything went off except wash basins. And I went ashore to the cottage baths in South Shields quite a lot and had a proper bath, because the showers weren't working and you just had to make do with stood up.
Were the showers fresh water or seawater?
When we were in dry dock, they came from ashore, part of the system. But when we were at sea, we had a, you know the name of it if you think about it, and I can't think of it, a plant which turned seawater into fresh water. Desalination. Yes, desalination plant. And that, there was no problem, it just kept going.
What about washing your clothes? How would you do that?
You'd do that in the same room that you had your shower and the wash basins and so on and so forth. If you're like me and hopeless at doing that, you find out a chap who likes a drink. George Stone was the man. It was the best man in the chief petty officers, and the chief told me, if you take him to George, he'll do them, he won't charge you much. So I took him to George, and they came back in pristine condition, super, you see. So that was it, until we'd gone to a laundry. That was it for the first part, and George did my laundering for a long, long time. But when George, who liked to drink, had too much, he was the most objectionable person you could ever wish to meet. Didn't matter who they were, he didn't like them. But that was it, he was a cockney. But when he was his normal self, a delightful man, strange that. But eventually, of course, after the atom bomb, we had a Chinese laundry on board, which was ideal.
How did that operate?
Well, you had a laundry number. Mine was D75. Can't remember what happened yesterday, but I remember that, D75. And I found some, I don't know, a friend of mine borrowed them, because he was in amateur theatricals. He borrowed these, and he found them, and he must have had them, I don't know, 15 years. And he says, I've got something for you. He gave me these, and they were pristine condition. There it was, D75, and these were shorts, you know, tropical shorts. I think you had one day per week when you took your laundry in for a different division, you know. It was all allocated. So-and-so department goes so-and-so. And we also had a tailor on board eventually, and they called himself Jackson. Jackson the tailor, but he was Chinese as well, so I had a soap made by him, and it was very good.
Where was he located in the ship then? Where was his location in the ship?
In one of the these places, the 4-inch gun compartments, and you know, it wasn't as big as this, about 2/3 the side of this, and the machines in and all sorts of things. Yeah.